From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. Coming up, leaders from across the country and around the world came together today at the 67th National Prayer Breakfast, where President Trump pledged once again to defend religious freedom.
As president, I will always cherish, honor, and protect the believers who uplift our communities and sustain our nation. To ensure that people of faith can always contribute to our society, my administration has taken historic action to protect religious liberty.
Well, I was there, and I'll have more about the president's remarks at the prayer breakfast a little later. But first, the debate to outlaw infanticide shifted from the Senate to the House of Representatives today as House Minority Whip Steve Scalise and Congresswoman Ann Wagner attempted to force a floor vote on a Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. Congresswoman Ann Wagner joins us in just a moment with the details. Also, CBN's Chris Mitchell joins me here in studio with a report on his recent trip to war-torn Syria and what is at stake and what the United States does as it pertains to troops on the ground. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. As you know, we talked about this earlier in the week. Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska introduced the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act on the Senate floor. He asked for unanimous consent, to which Patty Murray of Washington State objected. Well, President Trump, in his State of the Union address, as we talked about last night on the program, challenged Congress to address the issue of essentially what is infanticide. Now, he also brought it up again this morning at the prayer breakfast, and I'll talk about that later. But in the House today, there was an attempt to get the companion bill introduced in the House. My first guest today is Congresswoman Ann Wagner. She represents the 2nd District of Missouri. She serves on the House Committees on Financial Services and Foreign Affairs. She's also a member of the Congressional Pro-Life Caucus and the Values Action Team, both of which we work very closely with at the Family Research Council. But perhaps most important to our discussion today, Congresswoman Wagner is the primary co-sponsor, along with our good friend Steve Scalise, to protect babies from infanticide after they have been born. And she joins us now. Congresswoman, welcome to Washington Watch. Good to have you on the program. Let me just start. I understand that there was an attempt today to move forward in the House with the bill. In fact, I have a clip of what took place on the House floor with your colleague, Congressman Scalise of Louisiana. I want to play that clip, and I want you to explain it to us, because I don't think our listeners are going to quite understand what's taking place, but I think it will be instructive. So let's listen to this, and I want you to tell us what happened.
Thanks. A unanimous consent request for the consideration of that measure would have to be received clearance by the majority and the minority floor in committee leadership. The chair is unaware of such clearance. Therefore, the chair cannot entertain that request at this time.
Further parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Speaker.
Inquiry.
Again, seeing no objection on either side of the aisle, Mr. Speaker, can the chair advise what is required pursuant to Section 956 of the House rules to allow my motion to be considered?
The chair would have to be made aware of such clearance.
So, Mr. Speaker, is there any guidance under Section 956 of the House rules to have that motion be in order?
Again, the chair has not been made aware of the requisite clearance.
Mr. Speaker, can the ruling of the chair be challenged?
The chair has not ruled.
Mr. Speaker, I asked the chair to rule on the motion of unanimous consent.
The gentleman was not recognized for that unanimous consent.
So, Mr. Speaker,
the request cannot be entertained.
So, Mr. Speaker, is there a motion that can be made under the rules that have been cited to allow for the immediate consideration of H.R. 962?
The chair would not issue an advisory opinion on that request.
Mr. Speaker, if this unanimous consent request can't be entertained, I would urge the Speaker and the Majority Leader to schedule the Born Alive bill immediately so we can stand up and protect the sanctity of human life. And I would ask all others to join in that request.
Again, that was Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana Minority Whip on the floor today. The chief co-sponsor of the bill, Congresswoman Ann Wagner of Missouri, joins us now. So, Ann, it was kind of technical, but the bottom line is the majority was not allowing the bill to go forward.
The bottom line is that Nancy Pelosi is blocking a vote on infanticide on the House floor. And that person you heard yelling, "Hear, hear," behind in the background with Steve Scalise was myself, the sponsor of this bill. And we put this bill forward 2 days ago, H.R. 962 for your listeners, so that they can make sure to lobby their members of Congress to get on board as a co-sponsor of our Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. Same companion bill that Senator Ben Sasse had in the Senate. And what you can do, and in what we did today, and we plan on doing it every single day, is to go to the House floor, ask to be recognized, and to bring this bill forward by unanimous consent. And the reason that it is being blocked is because Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the Democrat Party do not want to put this piece of legislation on the floor. Senator Patty Murray did the same thing earlier this week in the Senate, and it's outrageous. We passed this piece of legislation last Congress, I can tell you, with I believe it was a total of 241 votes, and there were six Democrats, Tony, that were even joined with us. And the gentleman, the member of Congress in the chair, serving as Speaker during this back and forth between my good friend Whip Scalise, was Congressman Henry Cuellar, who voted for the Born Alive Act bill in the last Congress. So what we've done is we've dropped this piece of legislation. We are also in the process of Congressman Scalise dropped the discharge petition rule yesterday. So now by the rules, we are forced to wait 30 days. And then 30 legislative days, and then we will be able to get people to sign a discharge petition. And once we get a majority of members of the House to sign the discharge petition, we will be able to force it to the floor. And every day up until then, we are going to go to the floor and ask by unanimous consent to ask that we take up this legislation on behalf of our babies who survive abortions and are, in fact, born alive.
Well, Congresswoman Wagner, I have to commend you for that, and I hope that that tenacity spreads to the rest of the Republican caucus, because I think bringing this forward each and every day that you are in session is critical to keep this not only, I mean, the American public, they get this, the president overwhelmingly getting a positive response when he challenged the Congress the other night to deal with this, but you've got to. This is one of those things in which the new majority in the House must be held accountable for this.
It's horrifying to watch the radical Democrat legislators argue that babies who survive abortion should not be given the same level of medical care that all other newborn babies receive. I mean, this is astounding, and we have seen this obviously in New York, where the legislators repealed a law mandating medical care for any baby born alive during an abortion. A law proposed in Virginia would allow abortions up to the very moment of full delivery. And it's interesting because I've spoken with Senator Sasse, and I can tell you that, in fact, only 26 states have affirmative protections for children born alive after attempted abortion. So there are things that we need to also be getting done, Tony, at the state level. And this legislation
Absolutely.
Makes sure that if an abortion results in a live birth of an infant, the infant is a legal person under the law of the United States. Our Constitution is clear that that persons born in this country are entitled to life, liberty, and equal protections under the law. And the Founding Fathers did not put age limits on who is entitled to life. So I am a strong, strong pro-life advocate. This is something that I have done since, gosh, for years and years, decades and decades, I've marched on Washington. It's one of the reasons that I was drawn to politics and public service, to fight for the most vulnerable in our society. To me, Tony, I hope and I pray for a day when abortion isn't just illegal, but that it's unthinkable. And that we're having this discussion right now, Tony, is almost unthinkable.
You're absolutely right. It is. Let me just remind my listeners, and that you also were the chief sponsor of the human trafficking bill that
right.
dealt with that issue. We've had you on the program talking about this. So this is a consistent view of the preservation of life, the sanctity of life. The other night when the president brought this up, and by the way, what this bill does, folks, we talked about it, but just to refresh your memory, this simply says if a baby is born alive, survives an attempted abortion, a failed abortion attempt, that first the baby has to be transported to a hospital to get medical care. There has to be certain requirements there that treatment is given. The baby just isn't, as the governor of Virginia said, you know, made comfortable but let die. That prevents that from happening. That's called infanticide. And that's a scary place for a nation to be, to say, well, we're just going to pick and choose who lives. I know we're trying to abort them, but if they survive our abortion attempt, then we're just going to let them lie in a trash can or something. Well, the other night when the president was very straightforward in this at his State of the Union address, you had half the chamber cheering, the other half sitting on their hands. So I would have to say that this probably, their reaction did not come as a surprise to you on the House floor today.
It did not. I find it disgraceful, I have to say. And as I did during the State of the Union, our president did call on Congress to not just take up this issue of born alive, but also to ban late-term abortions. I mean, let me remind your listeners that there are no laws banning late-term abortions in the states of Alaska, Colorado, the District of Columbia here, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, Oregon. I could go on. And our president today at the National Prayer Breakfast said, and this is a direct quote, all children born and unborn are made in the holy image of God, and every life is sacred, and every soul is a precious gift from heaven. I couldn't agree more. And I find the response by my Democrat colleagues, and I don't believe that Speaker Pelosi is speaking for all of them. I think that there are many that would join us in this. And so we will see in about 28 days whether or not they will sign, in fact, a discharge petition, and that we will force a vote on the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act.
Yeah, we'll see soon enough. Congresswoman Ann Wagner, thanks so much for joining us. And we're going to be encouraging people to call their members of Congress to sign that discharge petition as that moves forward. So thanks so much for joining us today. And again, thank you for your leadership on this, I think, a defining issue for us as a people, as a nation. All right, folks, don't go away. We're coming back with more.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. We're going to talk more about the National Prayer Breakfast in a little bit. President once again taking a bold stand for life. It's really encouraging to have a president that is willing to be so bold and challenging the nation, essentially putting before the nation the choice of life and death. It's almost prophetic. All right. The president, speaking of the president, on CBS Face the Nation over the weekend said that the U.S. will retain troops in Syria in order to protect Israel, among other reasons. That's a promising sign, I think, to those in the region, especially Christians and the Kurds in the northeast region of Syria. We've been talking a lot about this lately because it's a big deal in the Middle East. And the man who's been tracking this story most closely, in fact, he was just over there about a week and a half ago, is the CBN Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell, and he joins us today in studio. Chris, welcome to Washington Watch, and welcome to Washington.
It's great to be here. I used to live here many years ago, Tony, so it's a familiar city, and I really love it.
Well, you've been in Jerusalem, is it 17 years?
18 years.
18, yeah. All right. Well, all right, who's counting? Because I see every time I go to Israel, we're over there. In fact, I've used your studios before to do Washington Watch. I guess I should call it Jerusalem Watch when I'm over there. But you've already got that, don't you?
That's right. Yeah. Well, we have Jerusalem Dateline. We do a weekly show.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Syria. You were over there meeting with Syrian Christians and others in the region. And for those that may not have heard our interview 2 weeks ago, there is something unique taking place as a result of ISIS coming in and then, of course, the whole breakup of Syria.
Right.
Something has come out of that. Yeah. That's positive.
No, very positive. A new democracy is really being born, I think, in northeast Syria. The two reasons would be, you talked about ISIS, but also in the Syrian revolution that began in 2011, people were actually demanding or crying out for freedom. The Assad regime left a portion of Syria, the northeast part of Syria, and that plus—
He was kind of withdrawing his—
Exactly. You know, yeah. Remember, at that time, he was fighting for his survival. So he brought some of his resources out of there, left that area. And then when ISIS came in, the people of Northeast Syria really had to fight for their very existence. In the midst of that, they brought on a democratic, federalist form of government. They have a social contract that preserves religious freedom. I mean, that's one of their hallmarks, is that they want to preserve people to allow to express their own religion, whether or not they want any religion, and they prioritize the role of women in this new form of government.
All right, let's talk about the ethnic groups, the different people groups that are there.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I think that's a very important point, because I think a lot of people look at this area and say, well, it's all Kurdish. Well, it's not. It is Kurdish, but it's also Syriac Christians, Assyrians, Arabs, Yazidis, a number of ethnic groups, and this government is trying to represent all of these people so that people have an equal standing in this government under the law. But so there's a number of ethnic groups.
So kind of, let me make sure I get this right, but as this unfolded, it was because basically all these different groups, or handful of different groups, mm-hmm. we were talking about, they were targeted by different ones, and so collectively they had to come together to survive.
They did.
And exactly. By coming together in that mm-hmm. survival and a recognition of the, number one, the human dignity, the mm-hmm. differences and allowing the differences of religion to be expressed
right.
there,
mm-hmm.
the representation of you said, women in mm-hmm. government and other minorities, they have this democracy and this religious freedom that has taken root there. It's like a liberty tree in the Middle East, and it's the other than Israel, it's the only place.
That's a great way of putting it. It is a liberty tree, and it's blossoming right now. It's blossomed for the last several years. They wrote a social contract in 2014. If you look at the preamble, it sounds a little bit like some of our original documents, and they look to the United States as their inspiration. They see the U.S. Revolution back in the 1700s as a forerunner of what they would like to establish, this liberty tree in the midst of the Middle East.
And the risk here is if the United States were to completely withdraw from that area, you've got Iran, you've got Russia, and you've got Syria, and you've got Turkey. Mm-hmm. When I say Syria, I mean Assad.
Right.
They all want to rush into this area, which also happens to be an area where you've got a lot of oil and other resources.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this liberty tree will be uprooted.
Exactly. It would be uprooted. It would be overwhelmed by all these forces around it. And right now, this is what I'm sure that the U.S. would want to establish, what we wanted to do in Iraq. And this is the kind of democratic form of government that would be just what we would want to see blossom in the Middle East.
And that's a really good comparison. The difference with Iraq is that this you can continue with our agricultural terms here. It was self-germinating.
Yeah, exactly.
It took off itself, as opposed to us trying to plant something in soil that just would not work.
Yeah, and I just talked to one of the leaders of this new democracy, and it said this is a golden opportunity in the Middle East. This is just the wrong time to be pulling out and allow this to be overwhelmed by the forces, like you were saying, whether it's Iran that has Shiite militias that want to come in, Erdogan wants to come in as well, the Assad regime wants to come back, take over this region. But it doesn't want to come back with this kind of democracy. They want to bring back the kind of authoritarian government that he had for many years.
Now, there's been discussion about a buffer zone there on the border mm-hmm. with Turkey.
Right.
The concern, though, is that those communities, those towns mm-hmm. are being filled with individuals that are not going to provide much of a buffer.
Exactly. We talked a lot about that and with people there. And we were right there on the Syrian-Turkish border in a town called Kobani, literally just a few hundred yards away from the border. We asked them about this 20-mile security zone. If it's monitored by Turkey, this is something they say would be a disaster, because they say most of the Christians live in this 20-mile security zone. And they look back to an example in Afrin, which is a northwest Syrian town that was overrun by the Turkish army, allied with many jihadist forces. And that really was a population displacement. There were kidnappings, looting, confiscation. Churches were burned. Bibles were burned. We talked to one of the pastors who had his church burned.
All right. We're going to leave. We've got to hold it right there. We've got to take a break. We're going to come back, finish this conversation with Chris Mitchell, Middle East Bureau Chief with CBN. Don't go away. You don't want to miss the rest of our conversation. We'll be right back.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. We're joined in studio by Chris Mitchell. He's a CBN Middle East Bureau Chief. He is in the in Washington just actually a week and a half ago. You were in Syria, spent about a week in Syria. Meeting with the different groups. I mean, this is really fascinating because you've got Arabs who are Muslims. You've got the Kurds.
Yep.
You've got the Syriacs.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Christians. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got all these different ethnic backgrounds, and because of the external threats, they were forced together to work together to protect one another.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it turned out that it's working.
It is working, yeah. And it, like you said, it's this liberty tree. And they're all working together because they had to fight an external enemy, ISIS, at the time, and they all banded together and they have fought them. And they have lost maybe at least 8,000 men and women who fought ISIS. And, you know, Tony, when I was there, I really heard their voices. It was really extraordinary to sit down, for example, with the pastor's wife, Shinar, who had to flee Afrin, who told us about her cousin's son who was killed by some of these jihadists in Afrin. And just her cry. Her cry was, you know, after the announcement of President Trump, she said, does he know that we're here? Because not only they're evangelical Christians, the Syriac Christians, maybe 100,000 in that region. And that was her cry. We know, we love the president. That's what she said. We know he's a Christian. We know he prays. And he reads his Bible, but they just want him to know that they're there. Aram was a Christian Syriac soldier that I met with as well. And he said, he showed me some of the pictures of many of the fallen men and women who died, fighting ISIS, many of his friends. And much of their motivation now is that they really fought for their very existence, and they don't want these men and women who died to die in vain. And I also talked to a lady named Elizabeth, a Syriac Christian, who's part of this new government. And she said for the first time, she can represent her faith, her religion, as a Syriac Christian. Nothing, she could never have done that under the Assad regime. And here she is, part of a new government, this liberty tree that's growing in the Middle East. And they're pleading that don't let this breath of fresh air, this light in the midst of the Middle East, be snuffed out.
It was interesting. I met with a delegation from there earlier this week, and they were of different faith backgrounds. They were men, women, Christians, Arabs. And it's just it's fascinating that it's working there because it hasn't worked elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hopeful that we'll see an ongoing presence, just enough of a presence there to keep the these others at bay that this can take mm-hmm. root. I mean, could this not – I mean, you've been in the Middle East now, as we talked about earlier, 18 years. Mm-hmm. This has the potential to really influence the entire Middle East.
Exactly. And that's what they hope. They hope that what they are establishing right now could spread, first of all, to the rest of Syria and around the Middle East. And it would be a sort of – an addition to Israel, which is the vibrant democracy in the Middle East, if they had a parallel democracy there in the Middle East on their northern border, that would be just a huge game changer in the Middle East.
Well, you mentioned Israel. Let's talk about that for a moment. What protections does this provide Israel for this
huge.
Being there?
Because geopolitically, you know, you have Iran has been wanting to build a land bridge from Tehran to the Mediterranean. If you take northeast Syria and you make it Iranian influence, that builds a land bridge, but it also allows weapons to come in to threaten Syria. We know that Israel has been hitting Iranian targets inside Syria maybe more than 200 in the last year or so. And that would just increase the danger to Israel. If you took out this pocket of democracy, this liberty tree, that's really been a bulwark against the influence of Iran coming in. So that would be, if you could have this along with Israel, it would be a terrific ally mm-hmm. In the Middle East, not only for the U.S., but for the West and Israel.
And with the natural resources there, the oil, they can be self-sustaining.
That's right.
And no doubt, if they have the stability of a government as they have currently, mm-hmm. they can prosper, much like Israel, and mm-hmm. be an example to that region of the world that is desperately needing to mm-hmm. find a way forward.
Yeah, and they also see, so they have about one-third of the landmass, I think 30% of the population of Syria, and about 70% of the economy, mainly in the oil resources there. And one other thing, I just talked to one of the leaders, was it's a biblical approach. Isaiah 19 talks about a holy highway from Assyria to Israel to Egypt. And they see themselves possibly as part of this, that they could have this holy highway in the midst of a very, very difficult and dark place.
So how should our listeners, how should they be praying?
Pray for the protection of all the Christians there in that region that really are fearful of another genocide. Pray for the preservation of this new democracy, this new federalist form of government. Pray for the president, that he would hear their cry, hear their hearts, that he would protect this democracy, protect the Christians. I think really many people are looking to President Trump as the key for this, that he would, because he wants, even this morning he was saying he's protecting Christians at the National Prayer Breakfast. That was one of his statements. He's protecting the unborn. And he's really been an advocate for Christians that have been persecuted in the Middle East. And I'm sure once he knows what they're doing, what they're saying, what they're crying out to in that land, that he would want to protect them, keep them safe, as well as this new flourishing democracy.
All right, Chris Mitchell, as always, so glad to have you.
Great to be with you, Tony.
All right, folks, don't go away. Coming back with more Washington Watch after this.
The world on our horizon is like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Okay, as I mentioned at the top of the program, today was the National Prayer Breakfast, the 67th Annual Prayer Breakfast. The last 12 presidents have all taken time to speak at this important event. You know, President Trump, again, kind of unpacking some of the things he talked about in the State of the Union address. I mean, the two being so close together, I anticipated it. This was part of the discussion in the White House on Monday as we were discussing with the president, vice president, his team, the State of the Union address. I figured they would expound on some of these ideas. He talked about the First Step Act and the power of faith and redemption. But he was, as he always is, he's bold. I mean, there are I don't know that there's ever been someone in that office that had the courage to say some of the things that need to be said. Now, I know we live in a different time, but when you have a situation where, as we were talking with Ann Wagner earlier, that we're literally on the borderline of infanticide in this country. I mean, killing babies who are born alive. Now, I know we hear about this stuff so much, we sometimes just allow it to go in one ear and out the other and think, yeah, abortion, abortion, abortion. No, this is a new level. Abortion is horrible, okay? Don't get me wrong. I got that. But we're talking about now babies being born that survive an abortion and these late-term abortions that is borderline infanticide. So many politicians don't want to talk about this. They don't want to deal with these issues because it's controversial. That's why a lot of these issues end up in the courts, because politicians don't have the courage to address them. And then they bemoan the fact that you got the courts deciding these issues. It's because they don't have the courage to do what they should do. This president is an exception to that. He had this to say. He again reiterated his view of life. And by the way, Most were on their feet when he said this. In fact, this is the only place in the speech in which he got a standing ovation. Let's play clip number 9 when the president once again talked about the sanctity of human life. Listen closely to these words.
As part of our commitment to building a just and loving society, we must build a culture that cherishes the dignity and sanctity of innocent human life. All children, born and unborn, are made in the holy image of God. Every life is sacred, and every soul is a precious gift from heaven. As the Lord says in Jeremiah, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart."
That was the President of the United States today. Again, it really expounding upon what he said in the State of the Union, quoting from Jeremiah. And again, the response was overwhelming. It was an extended ovation, people on their feet. Now, there were a few that did not. Nancy Pelosi did not stand up, but the vast majority in the room did. It's refreshing because we have a leader who's willing to lead and say tough things. And people are responding. We talked about the polling on this late-term abortion. Only 13% of the Americans' population support what New York did, what Virginia attempted to do. This is an issue, and I think this is why the Republicans are going to continue to press this, and they should. I'm going to keep reminding you. In fact, we've got a video. You can probably see it on our Facebook page of that moment in the House chamber on Tuesday night when the president spoke about this, and half the chamber they were on their feet applauding the president for taking the bold stand, while the other half sat on their hands. This is a moment, folks. I was talking with some pastors today that I brought in town to meet with some cabinet officials, just to pray with them, and we were discussing that moment again today. The president did it again today, but it was most profound at the State of the Union address, because the president really, in some ways, was kind of like, similar to the choice that Moses put before the people. Choose life and a blessing, or choose death and a curse. And if you think about it, that's really what this choice is about. It's about choosing not just the sanctity of life, but the understanding the value of life and keeping us from going over the edge into a society and a culture that will tolerate infanticide. And then you have that choice, or you have the choice of a culture of death, despair, and destruction. And I think it's being made so clear, so clear. So anyway, I want to know what you think. Are you encouraged that we have a president that is so bold that even when it's politically, this is politically popular, but not the way he does it. It's most politicians just sidestep these issues. But I think he's being rewarded with the support because he's willing to lead. I think people are hungry for courage. That is, I think, what we lack the most, not just in our political class. I think it's lacking in boardrooms across America. We have CEOs that are chickens. And I'm not talking about producing chickens. They are chickens. They're afraid to stand up to the left in this radical agenda that they don't believe in, but they're chickens. And you see the same thing in our political class. But finally, you've got a politician. You've got a leader who's willing to stand up and lead. 866-372-7234, the number to call if you'd like to get in on the conversation today. 866-372-7234. Are you encouraged by the fact the president is taking such a bold stand on life? Also, I want to play another clip. Andrew Brunson was in town. I've been with him yesterday and today, and the president kind of gave him a shout out. Let's listen to the president talking about international religious freedom. Let's play clip number 8.
My administration is also continuing to fight for American hostages who have been imprisoned overseas for their religious beliefs. Last October, we reached an agreement with Turkey to release Pastor Andrew Brunson, who is now free and joins us here this morning. He was there for a long time before I got there, and I said, you got to let him out. You better let him out. And they let you out.
And they let him out. The president, best when you know, he's working off the script, just talking. The exchange he had was quite entertaining that he had with Pastor Brunson. In fact, Pastor Brunson's daughter is getting married this weekend, and the president made reference to that. He goes, "By the way, did I get my invitation?" So who knows? Maybe the president will show up at Andrew's daughter's wedding. President also talking about, this was another area where he weighed in that was, let me just say this, bold, in that he talked about this issue of, when he talked about religious freedom, he talked about it in the international context, but he also brought it home. And he told the story of a couple that had an adoption, that adopted a baby, and then he went on to say that, well, that adoption agency isn't there anymore, the Catholic adoption agency. They were forced out of business because of their faith. Listen to what the president had to say about that. Clip number 6.
We will always protect our country's long and proud tradition of faith-based adoption. My administration is working to ensure that faith-based adoption agencies are able to help vulnerable children find their forever families while following their deeply held beliefs.
The president there weighing into an issue that Congress has not dealt with. They've tried. The Republicans trying to put forward a measure, we've talked about that, protecting these faith-based adoption agencies, but they don't want to deal with it. But the president, again, weighing in on it. All right, let's go to the phone lines. We're going to go first to Kansas, where Mary is on the line. Mary, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I was going to say that President Trump, on his State of the Union address, I never watch TV because I can't see, but I sit out there and I listen to him, and I clap, even in my own home, because he's a man standing up. And Nancy Pelosi is so hatred of him that she'd rather see a million babies die than to give an inch to help save the United States. So what I've been doing, I may be from Kansas, but I've been calling all the states and talking to the senators or leaving a message or something saying, by President Trump, get rid of the 60 votes in the Senate so we can stop the Democrat from causing problems there. So get rid of it so we can get some more laws passed that's going to help the United States build up with President Trump, not be torn down. So I hope that will do some good. If it does, I ask other people to do it too. Thank you, and God bless you, and thank you, Tony.
All right, Mary, thanks so much for listening and calling. And let's go on down to Mississippi, where Jim is on the line. Jim, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, I kind of cringe to think where we would be if we didn't have Trump right now. Even if we had a wet noodle spine Republican, I don't think that would be anywhere sufficient to stand up against the Democrats. Sanctuary states, I think the Republicans are failing to put them in check. They are the ones that are producing the Maxine Waters and the Nancy Pelosi's. And sanctuary states, that's treasonous. They're importing illegal voters, and they're not playing, by the rules. And it's not being checked.
On your point, Jim, I agree with this notion that Donald Trump, I mean, he's a fighter. He's willing to stand up, and I'm not sure that anybody else. I don't think there's anybody else that would stand up like he has. And I think his courage to stand up on these issues whether it's national security, the border security, whether it's the sanctity of human life, whatever it is. Now, he's not perfect by any means, but he's willing to fight for the things that he said he was going to do. None of the stuff that he's doing, he did not, are not things that he did not bring up in the campaign. So all of these things are not new. They're things that he said he was going to do. He's fighting for them. He's doing them. And I think people respect that. It's refreshing. And I think that's why his polling numbers remain as they are. He's not losing ground because people respect what he's doing. And it's refreshing. Jim, thanks so much for the call. Let's try to work in a couple more calls here. Let's go to Jesse in Arkansas. Jesse, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, how are you today?
I'm quite well. How are you?
Man, I'm enjoying life. You know, I'm glad we have a president that will stand up. But the bottom line to all of it, the Democrats is taking so much money from Planned Parenthood, they could not set up and cheer or anything against the infanticide. And, you know, it's just a sad country when people want more money than they care about people's lives. And I don't believe it. But I pray for
them. Well, keep praying. Don't stop praying, Jesse. There is that connection with the money, and in fact, we talked about that with the governor of Virginia. I think it was number one, number two, or number three in terms of the donors, in terms of their volume, was Planned Parenthood to him. So, is there any reason that he would not do what he's doing? There is a connection. All right, one more call here. Let's get to Joe in Texas. Very quickly, Joe, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It occurred to me, as you said, that we lack the courage, and the courage is always going to be fueled by what we care about. If our kids were in danger, courage would rise up because we love them so much. I think we lack the love for God and our neighbor to take action, and that's where we need the courage. It comes from the love, and here in Texas, Tony, we had a 16-year-old boy who asked our governor to abolish abortion for his Make-A-Wish Foundation before he died of cancer. His name was Jeremiah Thomas, and we just presented our governor over 70,000 petitions this week called Jeremiah's Wish, and we're really, really praying for some courage in Texas to get some leaders on board with HB 896 to abolish abortion in Texas.
We'll follow up on that, Joe, and look into it. Joe, thanks so much for calling, and I think you're spot on. I think if we have a love and a reverence for God, we won't have a fear of man. And it does come down to that lack of reverence and love for God who's given us so much. And I guess it's about all of us going back to the very core of who we are as believers and that relationship and the fact that God has given so much through his Son, forgiving us of our sins. As we love him, as we revere him, we'll fear no man. Out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.